very much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's Friday. I heard that all the good sessions are last. Is that true?
Yeah.
Good.
See?
Good. All right.
The day after Tech Fest.
The day after? The morning after. The
morning after, sorry.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Jim Adams. This is
Scott Clevin.
We're from the land up over. Redmond, Washington, USA. We were asked to come down here and talk about SharePoint, cloud, et cetera.
I think we wanted to give one of these away right off the bat, right?
Yeah, so it sounds like there's people that may need some water or some refreshments today. So if anybody's fresh enough to tell us what today's session's actually about, we'll give you a cup so you can go get some water and start the morning off right. All right, go ahead. Roughly.
That's pretty close.
All right.
Yeah.
He has the title slide.
Okay.
Thanks.
You would have been 100% correct if you'd have said how Microsoft IT migrated SharePoint.
That would have got him
in
the car.
Yes. Almost. Okay. All right. We'll get started here. If this is not the session that you thought it was, too bad.
Doors are locked.
So here's a brief history of online services at Microsoft. This is more of the background as to why we ventured into the cloud and ventured into migrating into Office 365 to begin with. We have a perfectly good on-premises story, so why would we go and upend it all and move to the cloud? So
they don't need to know the dirty secrets.
Right. So in 2004, we had managed services. It was a brand new service that we started up. We had just a few customers at the time that trusted their content to Microsoft. And we spun up this dedicated cloud offering. It was called MMS. Then MMS grew up and became Business Productivity Online Services. That rolls off the tongue very nice. And they expanded the MMS service into a dedicated and shared offering to a very limited clientele. They did that for a little while, and then they came up with Office Live in 2008, and this was the first large-scale public cloud offering. And this was designed for the mom-and-pop small to medium-sized businesses. And with a credit card, you could get Office and SharePoint and all those good collaboration bits. And then finally, 2011 saw the release of Office 365, which was the enterprise public cloud, and it was for large-scale enterprise customers. And that's where we're going. And there are two flavors of this cloud, a public side and a private side. Which one are we going to? Well, both.
Actually, all three.
Yeah.
We're staying
because,
on prem, too.
Because Microsoft IT is Microsoft's first and best customer. There's a phrase that we use at Microsoft. It's called dog fooding. Who is not familiar with the term dog fooding? Just a few? Okay. Well, I'll explain what that is.
Let them guess.
Let them guess?
Let someone guess for the car.
Okay. Of the people, okay, I can't remember who didn't know.
Raise your hand if you don't know what dog fooding is.
It's ruined, see?
They don't know.
Mind. Okay. All right. What do you think dog fooding is? That's a good enough answer.
All right. We'll go right here.
Feeding yourself the rubbish before you give it to the people.
That's actually real garbage before we give it to the people. I have to give it, yeah. No, give them the car on that one.
What?
It's kind of fitting. Oh, out. We said the car. All right. Oh, you're going to build some enemies and not meeting up to car commitments.
Okay. So there's a host of companies that have taken advantage of our dedicated offering.
So were you going to explain it?
So what is it?
Yeah.
He said it. What it was.
Well, kind of. Well, it's not garbage.
Oh, all right. He did say garbage?
He did say garbage.
Okay. Microsoft IT is Microsoft's first and best customer. That's according to us, because we get all of the bits that we develop at Microsoft way before it gets released to the general public. And we actually inflict this software on everybody at Microsoft that has a login that uses our network internally. So we have 180,000 captive audience members that are testing the bits in production, their day-to-day activities, using alpha software, beta software, and they endure upgrade after upgrade after fix after fix, so that we can find those problems. He's nodding over here because he's one of those inflicted. Yes. We find most of the bugs in the software before it's released so that our customers don't find those bugs. We can't find them all, but we find most of them. And it's a phrase, eating our own dog food, that was coined by, I believe it was Bill Gates or maybe it was Steve Ballmer, where Microsoft IT and all of the Microsoft employees actually test and put the software through its paces before it gets released. And at any given moment in time at Microsoft, we will be dog fooding three or four different products. And there's never a stable time for our network citizens at Microsoft because we're always dog fooding something. And Microsoft is rather unique in that we build the software that we run our business on. It's quite a challenge. So that's dog fooding.
Just past the garbage stage, recycled stage.
Yeah. So this is a snapshot of some of the customers that are taking advantage of the dedicated cloud offering that we have. And they've been with us for quite some time. In fact, the little pink bunny here, Energizer, they were our first customer in the cloud space. And they're still with us. So that's kind of good. So many of these companies that you see here are thinking about going into the public cloud because the public cloud is less expensive per user than a dedicated cloud offering would be. And these two people here, on the left is Steve Ballmer, and on the right is our CIO, Tony Scott. And they said that IT is all in to the cloud because we have to prove to ourselves that the public cloud that we're coming up with here, Office 365, is ready for the enterprise. And what better enterprise to test this theory out than ourselves? So they put it upon our small team to move all of our collaboration services, our Office, our SharePoint, our Exchange, into the cloud. And they gave us a few years to do it.
10 months.
We'll talk. Okay. So what is the size of the enterprise that we have? Well, we're in 107 countries. We have close to 200,000 end users, 12,000 servers and data centers throughout the world. Let's see, 1.3 million devices and growing. I know it's growing because I just myself have 7 devices that I connect. And that's a part of the thinking that we have to look at and think about as we go forward into the cloud and why we're going there. So this is the scale of Microsoft IT. It's a huge environment, and we're very, very lean at Microsoft IT. We don't have very many people to do this. And here's a snapshot of all the services that we have on premises and their cloud counterparts. And the cloud counterparts are growing, and it's becoming more and more evident to us that there's nothing that we do on premises that we really can't do in the cloud. So that's where we're going. This is why we're doing it. And before we get too far, we want to go into just how large is our SharePoint environment, because that's what you're here for, to learn about our SharePoint environment. So we have 3 regions. We affectionately call them North America, South America, the Americas, Europe, Middle East and Africa, EMEA, and Asia Pacific, APAC. And in those 3 regions, we have 3 data centers, one in Seattle, one in Dublin, and one in Singapore. And in those 3 data centers, we have 64% of all of our SharePoint corpus in the Americas, 21% in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and 15% in Asia Pacific. And if you take a look at the totals here, it says 36 terabytes. We're actually at about 38 terabytes because this was a snapshot taken February. And we have about 200,000 site collections, and we have about 500,000 subsites in our environment. Why do we have so many? Well, because we're paid, Microsoft IT and Microsoft employees are paid to break the software. You can't break the software by not stretching its boundaries. So we have open enrollment. Anybody with login credentials can create a SharePoint site. They can create two if they want. They're small.
Ten
if they want, as many as they need. That's not to say that we don't have some kind of governance to keep tabs of things, but we do have unlimited site collection ownership at Microsoft so that we can see where the seams are starting to burst, you know, on the side, and let the product group know where those boundaries are.
And this is what we've been tasked with to migrate over. And we'll get into what this means here in a few slides, but in the big scheme of things, this is what Microsoft is moving to the cloud.
So as far as what we have, you might ask, okay, that's a lot of content. How many farms is that? Well, it's approximately 45 farms, give or take a few. And these are some of the business units that have portals. This is some of the utility space. We call them SharePoint, Team, My. We have an extranet, and then we have our SharePoint Online offering. And then we have a shared service called Search using Fast. That's our 10,000-foot topology as far as services go.
It's important to note really quick, too, as we look into the migrations, the category on the right are custom portals. These have dedicated resources, high customizations. The ones on our left are global farms. We have regional deployments of each, but they are their utility platform. It's standard across the board for everyone. We do not allow customizations on those.
Yep. So it's broken up into custom stuff and utility, and I'd say 85-90% of it is in the utility side. Doesn't look that way, but there's a lot of small portals that we also maintain. So what does it take to maintain all this? Well, the entire collaboration team consists of 47 full-time employees, plus 13 full-time employees to do the custom side, the line of business portals and things like that. On the utility side, to do Exchange, SharePoint, Link, etc., all the collaboration tools at Microsoft, we have about 144 vendors that we use to do the day-to-day operational work, upgrades, patching, things like that. On the custom side, they have 44 vendors. So as far as the infrastructure that it takes to put all this together, we did a count of our servers, and this is what we have in the Americas, and this is what we have in the regions. That's a lot of hardware out there.
Looks like a bag of Skittles.
Pardon?
Looks like a bag of Skittles.
It is a bag of Skittles. So this is what we have to work with. And where are we going with all this? We're going to the cloud. So this is kind of a schematic of all the servers that you saw on the previous slide. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to move that many into the cloud. Why do we even have 50-some-odd servers left? Because we still have to dog food. There are still enterprises out there that will not or cannot go to the cloud. Therefore, we still have to produce software for those enterprises that still need the server products. Well, we can't dog food unless we have some properties still on premises. So Microsoft IT can't go 100% into the cloud. We have to have a hybrid environment. We have to have on premises. We have to have cloud, public, cloud, dedicated. Now, the whole point of anybody going to the cloud is to save money. But we'll be quite frank, up front, you won't save any money because you're going to have to hire people in or juggle people around so that you can move to the cloud. And Scott is our migration PM. What did we have to do to ramp up, which accounts for this dip?
We'll get into that slide in a second, but a lot of it is actually based on your business decisions, and really defining what you want to do and where you want to go. And we'll get into that in a second. The biggest point, though, is we had to take a step and redefine our entire SharePoint offering. We took a step back from an enterprise level, set a vision of this, and said, what do we want to do and how are we going to get there? And then once we created our grand vision without any rules or boundaries in place, then we stepped back and realized what it is actually going to take. And so we have a slide representing that, but the biggest portion of this is manpower and server power, because we had to maintain an on-premise platform in addition to online, and we'll showcase that in a minute.
Yep. So you'll see that we're going to start saving money after next year.
Knock on wood.
Yes, knock on wood. And eventually we'll have, by fiscal year 16, 95% of all of our collaboration services in the cloud. Yet we'll still have our on-premises installations for dog fooding. So what gives us the scale? Why can we save money by going to the cloud? Well, one of the big reasons is the modular data center. This is a fourth generation data center concept where they literally buy servers by the rack and by the container load. They're pre-configured at the factory, at HP, at Dell, at the company where we purchase the hardware. They drive them up, they back them into a data center that no longer has a raised floor with the huge heating, cooling, ventilation systems with refrigerated air. It's all room temperature air, forced air, and there could be 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 servers in each of these containers. And they just back them up, put the air handler unit on top of it, and they plug it in. So it's servers by commodity. And that's what gives us the scale that we need to save money. The traditional data center with the raised floors, with all the racks and all the heating and cooling, it takes about the same amount of energy to just run the facility as you're getting in compute power for that server. With this scheme, we're almost at a tenth of the overhead to run a compute unit. So the ratio used to be 2-1, now it's 1.1-1. So that's where the economy of scale comes into play. And because we have this economy of server resources, we can ramp up and ramp down according to demand. So at any given time, if we know that we're having a huge event like our Microsoft company meeting, where we actually rent out the ball field there in Seattle, and 16, 18,000 employees descend upon on the company meeting, we know that there's going to be this ginormous spike in network resources required to feed this to the rest of the world, where we have the other 160, 170,000 employees. So we can put servers into the rotation at the drop of a hat, and when we're done, we can decom them, and they go back into the pool. So it gives us quite a bit of flexibility there as well.
So outside of the unit, the server component of this, there are actually quite a bit of benefits that we're already seeing. Now, as we mentioned earlier, we do this early stages, so we expect that there's going to be pain, and some of our investments due to that. However, as we're getting into this, we're 10 months in from the point that we had the go, the big rubber stamp that said, move forward, change your direction, and move to the cloud. And we're already seeing benefit. Outside of the less infrastructure that you have, you're able to optimize your resources better as well. You can take the people that do a run state day to day, and they can start looking at the future. What's next? You'll notice that we also line up business applications. If you're familiar with the cloud, you know there's no customizations allowed. So we've been able to take our resources and start redefining this, leverage the application model, leverage Azure, and tie everything together between on-premise and online. In addition to that, the social component of this, and we have a session after this that we'll get into quite a bit on that, the social adoption has been pretty amazing at Microsoft so far. The tools that they've created and brought together have allowed us to reach a broad audience with a single message instead of doing the standard call your help desk, answer a question, and it's a one-to-one relationship. We can hit the broad masses right now with that. And then again, as Jim mentioned earlier, we have access to this anywhere. And we'll get into this in a second further. Anytime, anywhere, by any device, you can access your data. We can collaborate on SkyDrive Pro, loading our content in the cloud, go home, deploy the client. We're ready to roll. I can work from Seattle. I can work from here. Doesn't matter. Heck, I can work on my phone while we're talking, while Jim keeps blabbing his mouth. So, to that point.
You don't get a cup.
Dang it. I got
a
cup.
So does everybody here see the clouds on the horizon?
With sun, not storms.
Cloud on the horizon. I equate it to this. Those two guys are IT guys. And they see on the horizon this cloud that's coming. You can do one of three things if you see that cloud. You can ignore it and just suffer the consequences, like these guys are, of the herd, you know, the wildebeest that are coming. Or you can wait and react as soon as you can. You don't want to ignore it. You probably don't want to wait and react. What you want to do is you want to anticipate what that cloud is and be ready for it. And that's the approach that we took. 2 years ago, Tony Scott said, we're all in the cloud. What did that mean? And then he defined it as we came along the journey as to what that means. And our GM said, we can't be a traditional IT department anymore. We can't put up barriers, security barriers, legal barriers. We have to think differently. We have to kind of put our thought processes on its ear. And we have to imagine what we can do to better the service. We don't start with the limitations. We start with the end goal in mind. And that's kind of what brings us to, you know, bring your own devices. The onslaught of the remote worker. Universal access from anywhere. It's all wireless. And the big one, social networking. How is that going to play into the way you're going to do things in the future? So you have to think sideways. And we did think sideways. We imagined what the service would look like if we had no barriers. What if we were guaranteed to succeed? What would the service look like?
Disneyland.
Disneyland, there you go. So any device, anywhere, any place, any device, any surface, whatever. And with this type of thinking, and it's kind of akin to what NASA does. They say, okay, we need to go to Mars. We want to go there with a robot that's the size of a VW, and we want to go and zap rocks with a laser beam and figure out what they are. They didn't think, oh, how much fuel is it going to take to, put 1 kilogram into orbit and then multiply that. They didn't work at it from that angle. They worked at it from the end goal, and then they figured out how to get there using limitations and the resources that they have. So we did the same thing. We designed what we thought we could design, and then we went back and talked to security. We went back and talked to networking. We went back and talked to all of the stakeholders of the services that we partner with to deliver these services. And we came up with our plans. So that's our recommendation, is to just think outside the box and leave your baggage behind. So with that, we'll give away a car. So who can... everybody knows that we're from Seattle.
We'll cave that away.
Yeah, we're from Seattle. What is the name of the nearest volcano to Seattle? Way in the back. No. Pardon me? Mount St. Helens is a volcano, yes, but it's not the closest one. Mount Rainier, yes, sir. Come on up. It happens to be dormant.
We hope.
But it is.
We hope. It's rumbling.
Pardon? Oh.
Yeah.
We got told, I think yesterday, that most of the data centers are in the direct line of the lab, so I should have actually.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Okay, that doesn't get you a cup. No, it does. It does, because it's a good question. Yes, our data center is in Seattle. It's in a place called Tukwila. It is in a valley called the Duwamish River Valley. If Mount Rainier were to ever blow its top, the Duwamish Valley is where the Lahar would go. So yes, it's in danger. But we have a secondary data center in Quincy, Washington, 200 and some odd miles as the crow flies, due east. And it's safe. Well, there's four volcanoes separating the two data centers, so it's safe, okay?
All right.
I actually have a talk where we talk about that. And we have a graphic. Here's the state of Washington, here's our Tocqueville data center, here's our Quincy data center. And the question is, what's wrong with this picture? They say, yeah, it's too close, and you got volcanoes. Yeah, we got a whole line of volcanoes separating the two, so we're okay. All right.
The cloud will change that. Data centers are a different location.
So, you want to think outside the box. And consider the new collaboration tools. Email is the slowest method of communication anymore. It used to be the quickest way. But now it's more messaging, texting, things like that. We have collaboration repositories such as SharePoint and other competing products. We have storage in SkyDrive. And we have messaging, chat, phone, social. We have, as far as Microsoft is concerned, we have a new Yammer product that we acquired. We have video conferencing. And in connectivity, there's wireless everywhere. And more and more devices are GPS location aware. And devices, what is coming in this onslaught of new devices that are, you know, we have our old workstations, our laptops, those we've had for quite some time. Tablets we've had for a while, they're having a resurgence now. Phones, everybody has a phone that is a smartphone now. Then we have hybrid devices that are phones and tablets or phablets or whatever. And then we have Surfaces, not just the Microsoft Surface, the brand, but every one of these things are now Surfaces because you're interacting with a Surface. It's a tablet Surface, it's a phone Surface, maybe one of those coffee table Surfaces or those gigantic conference room perceptive pixel Surfaces. And then we have the mobile workers and telepresence. It doesn't matter where you sit anymore. You can be at your virtual meetings, and you're now an entirely mobile workforce. That's where it's going, and that's what you have to do, is think outside the box and be able to support that.
Now I'll pop their bubble a little bit. Oops. Go back. All right, so as Jim mentioned, we approached this thinking out of the box. What was this grand vision that we wanted to do? What was the grand vision that we were asked to do? And really, why did we want to do it? So we took a step back, and we took the first month or 2 months literally doing just that. A lot of whiteboards, a lot of arguments, a lot of discussions, a lot of fun. You know, it's a big puzzle. And we came up with this pretty picture. We would just pick up, and we're going to move the content to the cloud, and it's going to save us all this money, and we're good to go. And then we had to talk to our business units and figure out really what was capable of this. So as we referenced earlier, we got 36 terabytes. We're spread across the world. We got customizations. We got heavy utilization. How are we going to get this over here with little impact to our end users? And so once we started to step back and work with our partners, we realized you're no longer behind the firewall. You got security issues you got to think about. You got regulatory requirements. What are we going to do with content that sits in the regions? One thing that we've noted is our data centers, we reside in each various global region with EMEA, Asia, and North America. However, with the cloud, you get one data center. You either have to be in Chicago, or you have to be in Asia, or you have to be in EMEA. You can't be across the board yet, which means no longer can we connect everybody. If we're going to move them, we got to bring them to one single location.
Just a point of clarification, you're in one region only, because in the cloud, in Microsoft's Office 365 cloud in particular, your data is replicated two more times within the single data center. So you have three copies in the data center, and you have geo-redundancy within the region. For Microsoft, we have geo-redundancy between San Antonio, Texas, and Chicago, Illinois, and it's replicated constantly between the two. So when I log into my email box, into Exchange, I can be served out of San Antonio one day and Chicago the next day. Same thing holds true for the SharePoint space. It can be, you know, your farm could be in Chicago one day, next day it's in San Antonio. So there's six copies of the data, three copies in each of the two.
And what's been impressive is Jim actually drove our disaster recovery for on-prem, and he got it down to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Turnaround time. They've done this seamlessly. They've switched back and forth on us without telling us, and it's been clear as day. And we really do not know. So a couple of the other pieces that we've had is physical location. Again, they're not close. We have to look at connectivity, especially with our global users. We have to look at the infrastructure. Visibility. We can no longer look at the servers. We can no longer look at the logs. We can't troubleshoot like we used to. And that's a tough one to swallow because we like to have control. And then, of course, the hybrid. And this is the slide that we're going to get into next, and where you saw that dip in cost versus savings. This is the primary reason. So one of the biggest decisions that we made up front was our end user. We had to dictate that we had to maintain an on-premise platform while we migrated users into the cloud. It's not instant. And so we accounted for that. And one of the things we wanted to make sure is that we maintain our enterprise presence. Single master location for your search and your taxonomy and your profile. So we didn't have multiple masters everywhere and make it even more difficult than what we've already done. So when you look at the big picture of what our farm looks like, down below we have our standard utility farms in North America, SharePoint farm, our My Farm or social, our team farm, which was our dog fooding farm. This is where we played with the first and the best. And then the second layer of CorpNet, you see just three blue boxes, Search 14, EPA, and Taxonomy. Well, that was our existing platform. The investments that we made are all these lovely little red boxes in here. We had to build a 15 farm search farm if we wanted to consume content from online. We had to, because of that, we had to build a 15 taxonomy and a 15 profile farm because search has a dependency there. On top of that, the product didn't have any out-of-box components to sync your data. There's no migration tools to get your service data from one point to the next. And so we had to build custom applications to migrate and sync your data. And that sits on Azure right now through the new application model. And then we got our new 365 content. So these red boxes are where our initial investment is. And when you're looking at something like your search farm, which is about a $500,000 farm, 42 servers, it adds up really quick. Now, the good point is we can start decommissioning these in the near future. And this cost, and that's where you'll start to see the benefit come from that. Now, the fun part, how we got here. This probably, hopefully, people have some interest here. Unlike previous migrations or upgrades that we've done where we had hands-on with the product group, we're a customer here, just like everybody else. Yes, we get a little bit of insight. We slip some money in their back pocket. They give us some help. But we're just like everybody else here. We had to go through an evaluation process. We had to develop and identify solutions on our own and deploy those and figure out how to manage those and figure out how this is going to work. And when we took a step back, we realized that there is a lot of application development that is required. We had to build solutions to bridge your hybrids, your on-premise to your cloud. We did this via using standard APIs that are present in the tool to migrate our MMS data, our taxonomy data, our profile data. We had to build tools for governance. We had to control policy enforcement, expiration, lifecycle management, secondary ownership, classification. So we built a tool that does all this. It matches what we do on-prem. We recalibrated it and put it in Azure, and we have full governance in the cloud today, on par with what we have on-premises, using the standard APIs that are available out of the product. We've also identified, because of the regulatory things, an onboarding process. We had to get sign-off from our users that we can, A, turn on social, and, B, we can move their content, and that it can store it in the cloud. And so we built an onboarding process. These are just a few of the things that we've started to develop. Custom application models, data mining tools are some of the things we're investments. And what we're trying to again do is bring everything together. And we've been able to do this pretty successfully. Now, as I noted before, we made a decision that we were going to invest heavy up front and delay our cost savings a bit by maintaining your on-premise. With 36 terabytes of global deployment, this was necessary as a business decision. You guys, if you go this route, may not be as large. You may be able to do this much quicker and not have that investment.
Who has enterprises that have more than, say, 10 terabytes.
So let me ask this other question. How many people are interested in moving to the cloud? Okay, good. And none of you have infrastructures larger than 10 terabytes? All right, no, this is good. This is good. So you're going to see some of the back pocket magic here in a second, and then you're going to see the real world scenario in a second. And it's important to note that we follow the same process that you would follow. And there's good news on the horizon. So as we noted, 36 terabytes, global restraints. How are we going to do this? There's really one way to do this, per the product group, and that is through third-party vendors. The product group has made a conscious decision to bring competition to the table and actually reduce costs and partner with third-party vendors to do the data migration. And we went through this exact same process. They had a whole list of vendors that they partner with that have been included with them through the get-go, and they've done these fun kitchens, and they've done all these upgrade sessions. And we took a step back, and again, just like anybody else, we evaluated the customers. We did trial basis, we did negotiations, we did all that fun stuff, lost a little bit more hair, but we came to an agreement. And we came with an agreement with a partner to come in and migrate some of our data for us. However, as with any management, sometimes it's not fast enough, and you gotta move it up a bit because, again, we're in dog food, first and best. We gotta prove out scale. Migration is just one piece we had to prove out.
Yeah, but we ran into some laws of physics that
yeah.
were constraints. They were very hard constraints, by the way.
They are. And we're being creative, let's just say. So let's get to the fun slides. Now, this pretty little picture is what we did first. We identified a great set of target data, no customizations. It was sitting on 2007 still. People were ready to move. We had to get it up. And we knew that we fell within the constraints of a perfect compatible site. And so we identified 2,200 sites, 120 gigs, not much. And we partnered with Quest. Quest came out and partnered with us in migrating this data. Now, as IT, and as you guys may know, you never like to give control, especially Microsoft that has a history of, if we can't, we'll just buy who can do it and they'll do it for us. But this time we actually contracted out. It was interesting. But it was smooth, and it was actually really easy to do with very little customer impact. What we did in this case is you take your backups, you restore them to a staging environment, and you clean it up. No customizations are allowed in the cloud. So you clean out your customizations, and then at that point, you migrate your data over. Now, all this is non-impacting to the customer. You're taking full backups and you're moving without the customer ever knowing. And then you restore it to your target site. And then at the target site, they run an identity fix-up that does the claims encoding. And then the magic happens. Behind the scenes, they're running an incremental. And they're taking your change logs and they're updating it in this SharePoint Online production, all again without the user knowing. And then when that window is small enough to meet your business needs, you lock it, you finish your incremental, you go live, and you can do what you want with your on-prem sites. We set them to read-only for a period so people can validate, give them some comfort, they can feel safe. But it was done. 48 hours, 2,200 sites. That was the impact to our end users. It was pretty easy, pretty impressive. And using this, we've gotten creative in some other means that we've looked at. But this is the means that everybody out there is going to do. And we have shown it. We've done it just like everybody else would. There's been no secret sauce, no magic to it. And it worked very well with what we need. And we have some pretty good plans of where we're going to leverage this going forward. Now, again, management. You got to go faster. And in this case, while migration was a key scenario that we needed to validate, and we have run some amazing validation tests to prove out this product story, we have a very limited time to get the breadth and the depth that we need in the cloud. The Quest tool that we saw, very efficient. We were seeing about a gigabyte an hour throughput, though. And when you start looking at tens of terabytes or 20s of terabytes, it takes a lot of time. So we worked with the product group and said, how can we make this more difficult for you? And we'll just create a full manual process. And that's really what they did. And so now we've started to step outside the box a bit. And what we've done here is we had to establish two different staging environments. We take a backup of your site collections and restore them in your staging environment number one, which is sitting on 2010. We do our cleanup, remove all the customizations. Again, this is a tool that we developed because it was our customizations. We knew where they touched. This would be something that you would need to do as well. And now, since our SharePoint Online environment was on 365, your origination source had to be the same as your destination source, meaning they both had to be on 15 and the same build.
That's Office 15.
Office 15. Or actually, Office 2013.
2013.
Sorry. 15 is before they get creative with names like 2013. And so we do the site backup and restore, upgrade it, run test SSB content database, evaluate the logs just like anybody else typically would if you're going to go through a standard upgrade on premise. And then we take those and we robocopy them to a share. The product group picks them up, restores them to your Chicago data center. In this case, is where we're located at. Run an identity fix up, restore it, you're good to go. We are seeing about 40 gigs an hour throughput. We've come up with a calculation of about 200 gigs to 1,000 sites. Whatever you hit first is about a 24-hour capacity. And we're running 24-hour batches right now. Via this method, we've already migrated one of our primary farms, our team farm, which is our dog fooding farm. All compatible sites in there are now migrated over. What is left is data that is not currently supported in the cloud. Either because of business reasons on our side, which is our high business impact data that if it got out, it would be extremely critical. Now, it's not that it's not sitting there. We just have some RMS online requirements that we're working with right now for our legal team. The other piece is business intelligence. If you use business intelligence, you do have a standard offering in the cloud, but if you're really using things like Performance Point and SSRS and Power Pivot and Detailed, it's not really supported in the cloud yet. So to maintain our existence, we made the decision to keep them on-prem.
What is the nearest data center for you?
The nearest data center for you? If for locally, it would be EMEA. EMEA?
Dublin?
Mm-hmm. Dublin or Singapore, whichever. I apologize for my... Singapore is closer. Then that would be your primary data center. You know, that's a good question. You are limited to your network capacity as well as a static pipeline coming into the product. And for Microsoft, it's a problem for us in all actuality. Internal, North America or in the Americas, we're running pretty smoothly. We've gone through and made a pretty heavy investment in our networking. In our regions, though, we still run the problem of your egress and ingress pipelines. And that part right there is primarily based on your network capacity of what you guys have set up. And then you're still stuck with the internet pipeline, which is static. So in our case, we've decided a couple years ago that we were going to make a heavy investment into our network capacity. And to do that, we're going to go through and we're going to switch our proxy components out, put some hardware place in for balancing, and that would help. However, the cloud migration became a little bit more aggressive than we originally thought. We stepped ahead of the network plan, and now we are seeing some issues from the regions regards to proxy related. However, we are running tests, and we do have global users using the service right now, and it's been pretty clean. We have not received a lot of feedback in regards to the performance factors. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who will be able to use the backup and restore option ourselves?
Good question. Right now, no. Unfortunately, this is a teaser. What we have seen, though, is a lot of the early feedback that we've given, we've all of a sudden seen popping up in the product. Now, the product group realizes that throughput's a critical factor. There are the enterprises, and then there are the large enterprises. And what you're seeing now is you're seeing these means being evaluated, and without guaranteeing anything, without committing anything, product group is understanding that. But right now, the story is that we go with third-party vendors and their partners through that. And as I noted before, it was actually a really good process for us. Yeah, please.
When you migrate all the data to the data center, mm-hmm. Is there a way that we just start with? Because we migrate to the data center, Singapore data center, and then it
fails. Yeah. The difficult answer to give is no. However, there are means to do it. One thing that I note in here at the end, you don't have a PPE instance anymore, or pre-production instance anymore, lab instance anymore. Typically, the configuration that you would do is you would mimic production exactly. You'd build out a staging farm, and you would perform your actions that you would do and prove that it worked, build that confidence. In this case, the cloud that they have has some secret sauce of how they configure their servers. There's some secret configurations in the back, and they deploy, and that's not something that they share. And they really can't share because of legal reasons. So in essence, no. But what you can do is you can actually use production as your playground. And I know that's a four-letter word for a lot of people. It is for us. It pained me heavily to say this and do this and actually write this. But what happens is you don't have to enable that site in the cloud. You can migrate your data. You can evaluate it. You can open it up to your customers if you want. Maintain your on-prem, evaluate that it looks okay, and if it does, you can run through these tools, you can run an incremental and update your data, code over and go. If it doesn't work, delete it, do it again. No impact to your customer. And this is the means that we actually did. We went through months of trying to replicate this process over and over and over again, only to find that because of the issues that you have, it didn't work. And really the biggest reason you can't do that is you need an AD entry when you migrate your sites over. Your permissions have to be in place before you migrate them over because you've got to do the translation of the backend for the identity. And if you don't have an AD, it'll fail. So I hate to say it, it will get better in the future. I do know that they're working on some things right now, but at this time we actually leverage production for our dry runs. What's that? You made me admit that we test in production, though. We'll see. Let me think on that. Because I'm going to screw with everybody's minds a little bit more. So that wasn't good enough. So now we've moved our smaller enterprise. Okay. We've moved our mid-tier farms, our social farm, our my farm for North America, and we've done our team farm. Those are good. Those are a couple terabytes each. We got 26 terabytes now we got to move for our SharePoint farm. And this is actually what we're doing right now. I am pulling my hair out because we're actually in the process of proving the proof of concept out at home right now. And I can't be on my mail enough to figure out making sure everything's moving forward.
So all this is happening as we speak. We are actually doing migrations. And it took an act of our Congress to get him to come down here because he was so worried about his migration product. So
I've been invested in 2 years on it, so it's my baby.
So it's happening now. So I assured him that we're going to be crossing the international dateline so that he would know the results of the migration that hasn't started yet in the States.
Actually, it's successful.
See?
I already told him.
They haven't even started. They don't even know that yet.
Actually, they do. I told them last night. And it was.
Okay.
Actually, we are running a migration right now. It was fully, at least the IT portion of this was fully successful. Using this means right here, we did run through a migration this morning, and we actually migrated our top 100 executives from Bill Gates to the Windows presidents all the way down. Our top 100 executives, probably the most vocal people that you want to miss and that you don't want your name against if it fails. So luckily, I am across the country. Oh, what's that? Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just interested in the scrub customization thing.
Yes.
You haven't really
provided you the input?
Well, you know, customization is there for a purpose. I guess the product can do a lot of stuff, but there's something that can't do.
Yes.
Customization delivers it.
Yes.
Yes. Some of those things are substantial for organizations.
Yes. No, it won't, and we agree with you. And so there's two means to look at this. One is you do have to scrub your customizations, and you actually have to scrub sites that aren't compatible, and there's no out-of-box means to do that. And so we've built solutions to do that, file types, language packs, features and functionality like BI. The customizations ones, MSIT as a whole has made the decision up front to go with our utility environments that we referenced earlier that there's not a lot of customizations. We maybe have 4 to 5 server-side customizations. The client sides have been working okay. It's the server-side components that's been difficult. for the custom portals, that little stack up front on the right-hand side that you saw, they are all heavily customized. They're all dedicated farms. They're not going yet. They're not going to go for another, probably in the next 6 to 9 months is when we'll start that movement.
But they will go.
They will go. And what we've done is two things. Now, what I haven't mentioned here is we will not migrate 36 terabytes of data because Microsoft is taking us. We have 12 years of growth. And I don't know, has anybody had a farm more than, let's say, 5 to 7 years? Okay, you build a lot of garbage, right? Difficult to manage.
We are pack rats, right? We save everything.
Yeah, and so we're actually deleting a lot of crap. Now, to give you a quick example, I know we're running short on time, and I want to give a couple more of the slides. We did an analysis that it came through this morning. We have 140,000 My Sites throughout the world. We made the decision that we were going to give the individuals the option in North America because of regulations, regional regulations, that we would migrate their data for them, or they can create net new. Out of the 97,000 sites that we have in North America, we have had approximately only 10,000 people create a site. Actually, let me take that back. We have about 18,000 people that have created a site out of 97,000 people. Well, the remaining 40,000 in the regions, we have about 8,000 people of those. Now, that's 120,000 that are still not accounted for. Take away a few of those executives, we're doing that right now, but we are ending our on-premise social story in the next 2 months. If you have not created your site, and we've made it very difficult for you to maintain your on-premise existence, we put a nice, big, ugly pop-up every time you go to your on-premise saying, go to the cloud. Your site's gone. We might migrate 20,000, 30,000 sites over from our social deployment. We're going to delete close to 100,000 sites. And so, not saying that do that with your custom sites because there's heavy utilization there. Social is much, much different than custom. But what we are doing is we have built an application model. We have developers on our staff. And we're working with our business units to refactor those in the Azure model. And what we're going to actually start doing is twofold. We have a couple business partners that would prefer to start over, rebrand, similar to what we're doing with the social story. And so we can help migrate the large contents of their data into their site, and then they can rebuild their customizations as they need. Similar with content, customizations build up over time too. But it will take energy, and it will take an investment to rebuild your any server-side customizations. So it's not the best story, I apologize.
Yeah. 8 minutes.
8 minutes, okay, yeah. Yeah.
And then it might be 2007, and then when you find what it is, again, you moved on to 2007.
Yeah, so we archive and we store them in Stone Mountain. Stone Ridge? Stone Mountain?
Iron Mountain.
I knew it was one of those ores. Mm-hmm. Iron Mountain. And that's where we keep our backups. But we only keep them for a period of time.
Just as a backup.
Yeah, as a backup.
Yep.
All right. So let me hit these last couple slides, and we'll keep a couple minutes for questions, but we will be available afterwards for any questions that you guys may have. So as we noted, the site collection backup was not fast enough for management. And so we had to find a better way to do large-scale 26-terabyte farm. The proof of concept that we're actually working right now with the product group is something that was very familiar if you know the online service, the dedicated, the slide earlier where you saw Energizer and Coca-Cola. This is how they used to do this, and that is taking a backup of your drives, hopping on a plane, being kind of cool, dressed in a black suit, got a suitcase with the chain on it, and fly to the data center and deploy the drives. Problem is, SharePoint Online doesn't support that because of the identity and the claims component that has to be done when you restore it. You still have to go through the cleanup and the upgrade, but in this case, you're taking large batches and flying it over. You can do it a couple ways. You can take a few days of downtime, take all your databases, we have 149 databases on this farm, fly it over, restore them, do the cleanup. Or you can break them out. And this is, you break them out in, let's say, batches of 25, fly them over, non-impactful to the customer, and then the following weekend you fly over your incrementals and make that cut over. Now all of a sudden you've done 25 databases in a matter of a week. Now, this again is not supported. This was something that is being leveraged simply so that we can get the depth that we need in a very, very short amount of time. And in fact, this concerns me quite a bit because it is unproven. So this is my my life for the next 6 weeks is that, to make this work. All right, now the fun stuff, all the words. I apologize if this gives you a headache. I will not go through it all, but this slide really encounters some of the components that you should think about. Customizations, as we talked about. Unfortunately, customizations server-side are not supported in the cloud. If you have customizations, you either need to look to see how you can make those client-side or redevelop those and put them on the Azure app model. It is pretty smooth.
Which is what we're doing.
Which is exactly what we're doing, just like we're asking everybody else to do. Permissions. This is one, as we mentioned earlier, dog fooding. That has been a fun lesson for us. We use computed groups. We have our AD deployment. We've set up ADFS, and we use computed groups for our regions, our domains, North America, EMEA, Asia. Computed groups are not an AD entry. They do not sync to SharePoint Online, and they are not supported on SharePoint Online, which means if you leverage those to permission your sites, you will have to change. It is a very painful process. It's something that we're going through and working with security right now. But we use this heavily. This is what we actually, over the last 2 years, told our individuals to do. Change their permission models to use these groups instead of all authenticated users, where you run a risk of a security breach, to use the regional components. And now we got to go through and change those. Now, we are working with the product group to make the changes down the road. But this is something that we identified early that we're working with, and the product group, based off our experience, is putting together recommendations. Licensing, it's purely manual. Your tenant admin, which we talk about in the next session, is responsible for doing this. There are the PowerShell scripts, the APIs are there. You run a command, you do it. However, it is up to the tenant admin to run this periodically and as frequently as you need. We run it twice a week to make sure all new users are caught. But it is up to the tenant admin to be able to run this. This is not automated. On-premise and online, understand what you want to keep. Build your business plan, move forward. Have that clear cut before you go, because your story will depend on will help define what your investment is. Social, I am not a social guy. And social has been one of the most powerful things that I've possibly seen come out of this product. You know, Jim has heard me talk too much about it. We're doing it this weekend, but I fish quite a bit. Much easier to catch more fish with a net than a single hook. And this is what we're doing right now. We're hitting vast audiences with our social components, and it's been able to help educate our customers before we do anything by leveraging these tools, as well as connecting everybody.
Xbox uses social media for augmentation of their help desk, and they have one of the best customer satisfaction indexes in the industry.
Yep. And we're looking to leverage similar tools to that. Yeah?
I don't know if you can. I can't see the connection between the social offerings and decrease in fertility.
And futility?
Yeah, fertility. You've got decreasing COTS out there.
Oh, COTS. We actually spelled it wrong. Really, what COTS. We sleep on the job. No, and in fact, it's what we've seen with social is instead of a person calling a help desk, that taking an hour and going to our tier two, that taking a team of 10 people and then that goes on to us, which is a team of another 8 to 10 engineers, architects, and then potentially going up to CSS, we're having huge peer-to-peer support. So our users are no longer calling help desk, which is able to drive efficiencies into our support model that way, and leverage and start to look at scaling that down along the road. And they're doing peer-to-peer support across the board, as well as our messaging and our investments there. We don't need the headcounts to be able to manage our customer communications as much as we did. So we're seeing quite a dramatic, in fact, social is going to be one of our biggest cost savers in this short to mid-long term, because we're going to be able to scale down certain areas. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if it's to your liking.
I
what's that? All right, so
you have one?
Okay. Really quick, lessons learned. We kind of went through these, but understand preparations are key. Define your story up front. Your dry runs, unfortunately, it pains me to say it, are into production. You can leverage this. There is something called a development SKU for application development, where you can't build your like-to-like environments. You can leverage the development SKU and create a site that's kind of isolated for the most part, and you can do your application development in the cloud, not impacting your enterprise services. Performance. It's not instant. Understand that. And again, based off your current network architecture for your company, that could play a factor in your performance. And the support, lock it down early on. And we locked it down and are now having to readjust everything based off the findings that we've seen with the social feeds. And we've actually had to do a 180 in a lot of our investments on the back end to start mining the data and re-architecting our support model. And we'll get into that again.
Yeah.
Not to plug our session again, but our session after this actually goes into the support model. We go quite heavily into what the social means to that.
So after your morning tea, you can come back and we have a second session. Wow, that's a shameless plug for a book that we had a part in writing. How did that get there? We have another car. Who's good with geography?
And who doesn't have a car? I've heard.
Right.
Okay. I think that should be the limiting factor first.
Okay. Okay. I'll give you the first crack at this. Okay. but you have to be good at geography. Capital cities.
Oh no, don't.
What is the capital of Botswana?
You can check into it down the street in the Seattle Coffee Center.
Nope.
All right.
Do you know?
We got to give them.
Okay. If you answer correctly, then you have to tell me what's the correct pronunciation.
Come on. We got to build karma.
What's the
answer? Jim, we got to build karma.
Pardon me?
We offered to the car early. We got to give him the shot to answer.
Gaborone? How do you pronounce Gaborone?
Gaborone.
That's not how they pronounce it over there.
So they pronounce it down here?
You know this now?
I think that's the perfect way to end the session.
Radio.